Set your sails for the high seas this week as we join the hunters in slaying beasts of all sizes. Can this animated fantasy tale from Netflix be the next great big thing on streaming? Or will it fail to make a splash amidst the monster movie mania of the 2020s? Find out as we watch this week's film. This is Kaiju vs. History, The Sea Beast.
And welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your inevitable hoary host, Patrick, here, and joining me is a great tentacled kraken dragging you down to the briny depths, Miles. Hello, Miles. How are you? Hello.
Doing pretty good. You know, it's pretty fortuitous timing because I guess thematically, my fiance and I have been rewatching, like, from the beginning, all of the Pirates movies for the first time in many, many years. Like, I don't think I'd seen the second or third since theaters. Mm-hmm. And at least with the first one, I remember thinking to myself, like, why does no one make, like, swashbuckling adventure movies anymore? Mm-hmm. Like this. Like, there is this, like, joyous, nonsensical nature to the first film that you don't see very often. And I have to say, there is that nature in this movie. And Netflix is an odd duck, Patrick. This is obviously the Sea Beast 2022 movie directed by Chris Williams, who co-wrote the screenplay with Neil Benjamin and produced with Jed Schlanger. And
it's Neil Benjamin. Yes.
The weird thing about the Netflix movies in general, before we kind of go further, mm-hmm. is they don't market them at all.
Yeah, this kind of came out of left field and was plopped down in the middle of 2022 in June of 2022. Or no, it came out in limited release in theaters.
Did it have a theatrical release?
A very limited one. But yeah, it was mostly a Netflix streaming thing. They do that for awards purposes, for specifically the Academy, which requires you to have a theatrical release of some form to be nominated.
What's a bummer about that is, and this is a factor into a lot of Netflix stuff, is like kind of the post Stranger Things, post it's the prestige Netflix show. And when I say that, you're thinking of your Lilyhammers, your, what was the, I'm blanking, the Kevin Spacey political show? Well, House of Cards.
Yeah.
Your Stranger Things. Like, there was a time when Netflix released something, it was gobbled up, critically, like, glowing reviews, and it became a sensation on its own. Netflix has, for whatever reason, kind of felt that's what's going to happen to anything it ever releases on its own original function. And yeah. As a result, we've seen the death of many shows way too early. Patrick and I both lament the loss of Everything Sucks at least once a year. But their animated features are the weirdest of them all because they do kind of the Don Bluth thing where they take a lot of people who were that used to be involved with Disney or were former Disney animators and have this idea they feel strongly about. And they did this with Over the Moon, which was a movie that had plenty of Disney alums involved, especially with the music. And even here you have the director of, I think it's Bolt, Big Hero 6, and Moana.
Mm-hmm.
And
co-director of Moana. He was came in kind of like later in the process, but yeah, it's a pretty big name. And sorry, continue with what you were.
Oh no, even I think their newest one has like all these Disney alums, but they don't market these movies. I remember seeing this trailer when it was first like popped on YouTube and thinking, oh, this looks awesome, and expecting Netflix to kind of give it some of the flowers it possibly might have deserved. And because when you have like that kind of, like, I think the co-writer of this also wrote the book for the stage Legally Blonde play, mm-hmm. as well as Mean Girls. And it's like, all right, well, you have all of this awesome creative power. making a feature film for you. Why are you not pushing this? Like, why am I not seeing this anywhere else? You know? And I remember this movie being like, I remember the trailer coming out on YouTube, but I just don't remember it being like marketed at all.
I mean, yeah, like you said, that's a lot of Netflix's MO. I remember being pretty excited when this film
I love the trailer I saw.
Announced. Yeah. And when it came out, I'm pretty sure I watched it fairly soon after its release. And I'm glad I did. Pretty good movie. I will say, spoiler warning, like I said, it came out in a limited release in theaters to be specifically so it could be nominated for Academy Award, which it did. It was nominated for Academy Award. And do you remember what it lost to? It's another Netflix animated film.
Well, which year was that?
2022. Well, 2023 Academy Awards for 2022.
Oh, was that the... That wasn't Pinocchio, was it?
It was.
Oh,
it
was okay.
Guillermo del Toro in his very dark Pinocchio. His World War II Pinocchio.
We might see that again next year after his very dark Frankenstein comes out.
Yeah. but talk about very different films.
Disney's only, I think, offering there was Turning Red, I think.
Year. Ooh. I don't remember.
I like Turning Red quite a bit.
Yeah, kind of has a kaiju scene in it.
But we should be doing Turning Red.
Oh, we definitely shouldn't. But this movie,
given the movie we're just doing now, I mean,
this is specific. This is a movie called The Sea Beast.
Sea Monsters,
and it is about the Sea Beast Red.
We'll see.
That has a single you've obviously seen Turning Red, but. If it was about the main character and she turns into a kaiju, but it's just her mom at the end of the movie and it's pretty short.
That's it. We have watched much shorter, Patrick. That the length of stay should not be a metric that we measure.
Well, yeah, no, but those movies are about them. It's like the same thing with Ghostbusters isn't on our list.
Man, we watched the movie where Atragon. Where Magumo shows up for like 45 seconds and that's it. That's the movie. I don't ever want to hear that complaint again, sir.
That was directed by Akira.
I don't care that he directed it. And I love that we watched it. I'm just saying. But back to this feature.
I've forgotten what we're talking about completely.
Well, you can tell me what's in the title.
Yeah, Sea Beast. You know, the Sea Beast. There are a few different translations in different languages, but they most are, you know, sea monster, monster of the sea kind of things. The Chinese translates to Sea Beast Hunter or Hunters, and the Japanese title is maybe my favorite, Jacob and the Sea Monster. The Sea Beast is just such a simple title. I don't know if you like it or not.
I'm with you.
I think the using beast as a term is good, but boy howdy, are these kaiju in this film, Miles, and it's very similar. It's so funny that we're having back-to-back animated films with fairly simple red kaiju as like the main characters as well.
Yeah, and just about everything. How I complained last week that looked a little too DreamWorks.
Well, a little too
boy
toothless. Yeah, this is a very toothless monster,
a giant red toothless,
luster red or the red.
Well, and this is a complaint that not just I watched this with Krista, and she commented on this first. It's weird that there seems to be a variety of styles like at play, where like the water and the ships and everything else looks hyper realistic.
Oh my gosh, it's insane how crazy the water
and the water effects are. Some of the best I've ever seen.
And the sand, yeah. So that's one of the things about it. This movie is absolutely beautiful.
Oh, it is
to watch.
Well, it's animated to perfection. When you're talking about the things I'm talking about, the human designs are pretty. They're super
like
cartoony.
Them. Yeah, I think
the problem is they're super cartoony in the face of this hyper realistic world they're being put in.
Well, yes, it is definitely a blending of styles, because then you get up to the kaiju scale and there,
which is even more cartoony.
Yeah, very cartoonish and kind of to, you know, because they are monster size and monster beasts to make them well, a little more toyetic in one sense, but also a little bit more lovable. Like your main character.
Yeah, because that way you look at them as toothless, you know, and that seems to be the exact desire is like the little girl sees before everyone else, oh, there's more of this sea beast than meets the eye. And as a viewer, you're like, oh, 100%, because it's a big doofy looking toothless monster.
It definitely has those feline kind of elements.
If it was designed as like the Kraken from the Pirates movies, as I was talking about earlier, might be a different story.
Yeah, well, I do want to just kind of maybe before we, I don't know, do we want to talk about the plot of the movie itself, or do you want to talk about the kaiju first?
Well, yeah, let's talk about the plot of the movie, because it's a pretty fun one. This is a really entertaining flick.
Pirates versus kaiju, you know? It's
pirates versus kaiju, yes, but, like, I don't know. I love everything about this movie, because you start off with, like, this little girl played by Zaris Angel Hator, who I don't know if she's done anything else, but she is phenomenal.
Yeah, she's very good. Very good in this. She's not done a lot of elves. The same year she did Morbius. I think she was one of the kids in Morbius.
Oh, wow. Yeah. boy.
Yeah, she's still pretty young. She's recently done some of the TV show The Power.
Okay.
This is definitely a big break. I imagine she will be back in a potential sequel, because I think they are making a sequel to this movie. I think they did pretty well, so I'm pretty sure they
greenlit
at the very least. The director Chris Williams has signed on for more. It seems like one that they would probably want to turn into like a TV show, but I think they might have to do
that without their lead male role.
Oh, what, Carl Urban?
Carl Urban.
Why is that?
I mean, he just seems like he might be a little busy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's voice acting. So, you know, they kind of fit it in where they can. But yeah, it's not just pirates. There's also like an element of the plot of Moby Dick. We've got the captain.
Oh, we absolutely have a Moby Dick. Yeah, for sure.
Played by Jared Harris, who's a character actor that you've seen in a lot of stuff, a British actor who I liked a great deal in the movie. I actually kind of liked him more than Carl Urban as the Captain Crow.
I liked them both. And it was so funny because you mentioned that he's a character actor, because he was absolutely doing kind of his best Barbossa kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And because Krista was like, is that the same actor? And I'm like, no, that's absolutely not Jeffrey Rush. But he's doing his best Jeffrey Rush impression for sure.
Spoiler, he was also in Morbius the same year. Everyone's getting in Morbius.
This is what everyone was doing in Morbius when they got like sidelined for the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're going to voice this Netflix feature. I just want to hear that like Matt Smith also contributed a voice on his time off.
Where's Jared Leto? Jared Leto plays the Brickle Buck.
I don't need Jared Leto. I already got a stink all over Tron. I don't need more.
But yeah, very How to Train Your Dragon. Once we do get the main characters and the monster together, it takes a while. It feels like it's like 40 minutes into the film.
Yeah, no, this movie's like a 2-hour movie, and it's not that it doesn't use every bit of its 2 hours, but it certainly feels every bit of its 2 hours.
Spoiler warning, I think one of my favorite parts is when they do get in. They get swallowed by Red, and it sent me back to shades of Space Monster Mwangwi when that kid was stuck inside the kaiju's head and was taking a pee and stuff.
But Maisie is not Spider.
No, but yeah, they do a lot of fun stuff with, like, you know, Jonas and the whale kind of being swallowed by this creature, and then get sneezed out of nasal cavities, and do some very cool things with them being kaiju. And once again, that is a long way away from last week's movie Rumble, where they're just like big people, you know. These are monsters and they do monster stuff. They fight in the movie. There's a kaiju fight. So I kind of do want to talk. Oh, and the pirates in the movie hunt these monsters like they're whales.
Well, they're not pirates. They're hunters. They are
they're
designated. Well, yeah, but they're these designated people who are also taken care of by the government at hand.
Oh, well, if only Tyler's here. A lot of pirates were given writs of piracy from governments.
Yeah, and they were also privateers.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. But
It is not the same thing. And Tyler would agree with me on that.
No, they were pirating other countries' ships, you know.
That's not a true pirate.
Yeah, they're more, you know, monster hunters, you know, to use another term. And they
said,
well, they're in the movie threatened to kind of be replaced just by the Royal Navy in the movie, who I forget who plays the guy.
I don't either. I just think of him as Norrington from the Pirates movies, because again, I've been watching the Pirates movies. But also I love how the main thing is like the one lead pirate's like,
it's another
movie. You can't even move your cannons.
Admiral Hornigold is played by Dan Stevens, another soon to be Kaiju alum.
We'll see him again real soon.
But yeah, I thought that was an interesting kind of
they didn't really changing do a of the whole old lot guard with that idea though. Like it pops up, but like that thing's over in 30 seconds.
No, yeah. Well, the pirates the hunters have a code, which I thought was interesting. But I would have liked to have seen more ships versus kaiju battles. Those are always so cool. The first one that kind of opens the movie is versus the Prickleback, which is your classic kind of Kraken style design.
So I'm gonna play the tree hugger here, because like I'm watching this also made me feel like as someone who is a little bit involved in you know marine conservation and stuff like that, something I do feel a bit strongly about. I couldn't help but feel a little bit bad for that first creature because it just looked like it was kind of like minding its own business and it was attacked by the ship. And then you see it killed, and I was like, "Oh man!" And then the movie makes a point to kind of essentially parallel them with sharks because
the little girl says, like,
"You're in their home, you know." Mm-hmm. And this is something that I've seen a lot of specials, like including and giving credit to Jackass for doing this when they did their Shark Week specials. They're like, "Hey, you know, if anything happens to us, we are in their backyard. We're invading their front lawn. Like, so if we get bit or we do anything stupid, that's on us. And it really is on anyone in the ocean. If you're doing something that is purposefully like antagonizing these animals in their own backyard, like what happens to you happens to you." And I'm not saying that, like, hey, if you go swimming, you get bit, you deserve it. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But there is something to the idea of like, hey, let's demystify the monstrification of some of the creatures in our own oceans. I feel like that's part of the message of this film for kids.
For sure. I will say they don't go full How to Train Your Dragon, but that is also the plot of How to Train Your Dragon. Is the Vikings weren't on those islands. This is 100%
How to Train Your Dragon for sure.
Well, the Vikings in that movie were not originally from those islands. They came there and encroached on the dragon's land and just didn't quite understand how to coexist.
Which you get the idea that there's a deeper lore there because they do explain a little bit of that, but they just like scratch the surface. And I'm like, it does so in a way to like, oh, we want a sequel, and not so much in a way like, oh, I want to find out more. Because I get enough that I'm like, okay, you did this in the laziest fashion possible, but like, I don't need to know. You told me, you know?
Yeah, there's the Prickleback in this movie. We got Red Bluster, who's our main character, and we see him in a kaiju battle against a big purple crab monster, which I really enjoy.
I love that bit.
That battle in the ocean by the beach really reminded me of Ebra, you know, versus Godzilla.
100%. That's 100% what it's supposed to be.
And it ends with the crustacean just being flung into the air. Just very, very fun kaiju action. Yeah, and I do appreciate that all the kaiju are kind of like big primary colors, very blocky. But yeah, they have...
Well, it's also a point in the movie where it's like, oh, you call that red, you call that blue. Like, what do we do? We have a whole rainbow of creatures to take care of.
Blue is a very cute little toyetic thing.
Like, the fact that I haven't seen, like, a bunch of blues at your toy store or Walmart or Target is, frankly, a problem on Netflix's part.
But yeah, it is funny that they, well, it is not a toothless monster. Red is a very toothsome monster. But yeah, I'm a little disappointed that they didn't go more, I guess, specific. It is just like one big block color. Yeah. for the monster, which makes it look, like you said, a third level of kind of animation on top of the very realistic world. And I would say, I actually, like I said, really like the cartoonish elements of the, especially the hunter crew on the ship. There's like a,
oh, I love the crew. Like, I mean,
a redheaded member of the ship who's like the deck. She'd like, I was reading,
she just
something
loves
about
saying lubbers a lot. She says lubbers quite a bit.
Well, supposedly they went to fairly painstaking, accurate kind of sailing lore for the elements of the ship, because it's like, yes, the captain gives the command and then the person on deck is like giving out specific orders,
right?
And they all have their roles. And I really enjoyed the first hunting party when they grabbed harpoons and like attached themselves to the side.
Ship. I thought that was fantastic. I think that was a good tactical thing.
Well, I think that is something that they did I think they first,
like whaling ships back in the day.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of whaling, you know, living here in New England for many years.
Whoa there.
I am.
No, I'm going to step back a little bit on that.
The history of whaling is very, very interesting to me. I've read a few books. But
you're
no,
kind of
just
murdering humpbacks, are you?
Well, the main whale that they hunted was the right whale, is what they called it. R-I-G-H-T. And it's because they, like, in the 1600s, 1700s, they were everywhere. Like, you couldn't sail into the, you know, New England, Massachusetts Bay area without seeing dozens of these whales. So they're like, we got to start killing these things, you know, we got to harvest
them.
Yeah,
that's not my first reaction when I see a bunch of majestic creatures in the ocean, but sure. You do you, New England. Enjoy your chowder.
It's bananas if you get into it. Like, at the height of the whaling industry, when they were using it to like make lamp oil and stuff, like how many they were killing every single day.
It's crazy.
And the right whale, it is crazy. The right whale is super kind of endangered now because of that. But yeah, I was a big fan of the history of it, because these whaling ships would go out there and would sometimes try to go for sperm whales, which are just massive murder machines. And you do get ships versus whales where they would, if they failed to kill a sperm whale, it could destroy the boat. It could kill everyone on board the boat.
I mean, I'm kind of team sperm whale on that one. Sorry. Go whale.
My other favorite factoid, sorry to turn this into the history versus whaling podcast, is, you know, sperm whales.
The 38 pages on whaling and Moby Dick. Are you a fan of that?
Well, yes. Do you know how sperm whales eat giant squid? They absolutely destroy giant squid, and we know
on a buffet any day of the week.
Well, no, like, you know, 50-foot long giant squid. The only part of the giant squid that is indigestible to sperm whales is the beak, which is a pretty big honker of a beak, as far as, you know, it's bigger than like a toucan's beak. So those sit in the sperm whale's stomachs, and they've found sperm whales beached up, and they've cut open and found hundreds in each sperm whale. And they're just estimating, by like the population of sperm whale, there are millions and millions of giant squid in our ocean that we just never see because they're at the bottom. You know, the population has to be massive.
Do they not like release those at all?
The beaks that they have been able to harvest from sperm whales cannot pass through like the final part of the system of the digestive tract of the whale.
So what happens when they have too many like beaks or whatever?
They literally just accumulate them over their lifetime.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, it just does not break down. So, they cut them open and find hundreds, if not thousands, in each sperm whale.
And I do have to say this, like, as as many amazing kaiju as we have to discover in our film history, there are infinitely more amazing creatures in our own oceans to discover. And I actively like just invite you to like look into them, because like we do have fascinating creatures on Earth outside of our film spectrum, and they do need to be looked at for sure.
I mean, I've my entire life been a huge fan of giant squids because of the mystery of them, and like we've never seen a live one. Since then, we have had some video footage of, and you know, more knowledge about them since, you know, when I was a little kid. But it's just fascinating to me. Also, I'm
big,
a huge fan.
Michael Crichton's Sphere fan, are you?
I am. I read that when I was
it's a good book. It's middle school. It is a movie that exists.
It is. Yeah, the movie is fine. But
no, it isn't.
Big fan of the designs in this movie. I really like the Gurgleback. I think it's great. But I do enjoy the general whale. It's kind of closest, I would say, to an orca red in this movie. It's got a big fluted tail, and
it's a toothless sea creature. Let's just call it what it is.
It's very, very simple.
I appreciate you trying to give it some gravitas, but it's toothless in the ocean.
I really do wish in the sequel that they would take it a little further. I feel like they will probably expand the universe to like some other like kingdom that maybe is
Carl
still
Urban becomes the law.
Yeah, he has to lay it down on other hunters, and maybe they work with the sea beasts in the sequel. But yeah, really enjoyed it. I thought the cast was great. I thought the plot, while very simple, did it justice. Did the idea kind of justice, and some great action sequences too. I was blown away by some of the effects and things like that in the movie. Really feels like you're like there on board the inevitable, the ship. As
and great ship name, by the way.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff all around. Did you have a favorite scene in the movie? Something?
I'm trying to think. There's a lot of great like in between action bits where like, oh, like Carl Urban's character is like running up the ship and doing like bouncing off one thing. There's a lot of great like non-action action that's exactly like swashbuckling stuff that I really, really love. But honestly, I gotta say, there's this one amazing sequence where I think it's after Red saves them initially, and you see all of these like biofluorescent jellyfish kind of float up. And it's this gorgeous sequence, and it's one of the best animation highlights of the film. And I remember like even telling Krista, because she was doing something, but I said like, oh, come here, you have to see this, because I know that you're gonna love this. She's a big fan of like explosions of color, and the color grading and just the actual like precision of how they did this sequence is so gorgeous that it's probably my favorite moment in the film. Like there are so many amazing scene moments when and honestly, like direction too, like they did a phenomenal job of like where it'll bob up into the ocean and then like submerge. There are so many great moments that do that to like perfection. Like the animation in this film is so incredible. And if I had to tell anyone to watch this film for anything, despite the fact that it's a bloody fantastic film, is that like the animation's gonna like take your breath away.
We'll say that's been kind of my impression of all of the Netflix animated films that I've seen. They
I'm a big fan of them. Yeah.
A very, I guess, interesting path towards doing something different. Like none of them really look like, oh, I've seen this before. I guess I haven't seen like a ton of the animated films, but obviously Guillermo del Toro's is on another level. I really, really loved Ultraman Rising's animation style.
I did too. It's very good.
I'm trying to think what else I've seen recently. I guess the first one, the big one, was Klaus, the Santa Claus.
Oh
movie,
yeah,
which
yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed a great deal. And that's like in our rotation for Christmas time kind of movies. But yeah, I I enjoyed the animation in this a great deal. This movie, pretty widely praised across the spectrum here, has a 94% certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes by critics and an 83% from fans, and very, very similar scores on Letterboxd and IMDb. 7 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.4 out of 5 on Letterboxd, which is basically the same, like a 7 out of 10. Definitely critics enjoyed this one a great deal, but they didn't know what was coming with, I guess, Del Toro later in the year. Yeah, and like I said, I believe they're signed on for a deal. I don't know, for a sequel deal. I'm not sure when that would happen. I guess it's been only 3.5 years at this point, but I figured we'd be kind of moving towards when you would want to get a sequel out. But like I said, I feel like there's a lot of world to explore in kind of pirates versus kaiju territory. So I'd be all in for a sequel. Are you ready to rate this film, Miles? And I'm very interested to find out, what was your personal enjoyment for The Sea Beast? Because this is the first time you've watched it.
This is the first time I watched it.
We've not talked about it before.
We have not. And I really, really loved it. In terms of a swashbuckling kaiju themed adventure, I'm giving this a 9 out of 10. I think this movie is immensely enjoyable. I think it stops shy of being like insanely rewatchable, but like every aspect of this movie is fantastic. Despite the fact that I do have some issues with even the script or like the meshing of some of the kinds of animation, in terms of actual personal enjoyment, I could not have been happier with this movie. I think it's fantastic. I think it's a great time. I think it works as a great metaphor with how we deal with quote unquote dangerous ocean creatures and even with our own relationship with them. There's so many layers of this movie. I think it's fantastic. And I do hope we get a sequel, because I really couldn't have been happier with this, just in terms of my own personal enjoyment. What about you?
Yeah, I'm a little below you there. I enjoyed this film a great deal. I think it's been a tough genre, animated kaiju films, very tough to break through in the past and do something original. I feel like this one definitely meets the criteria, but in it itself is also just a very fun, family friendly film. And like I said, I don't think it really shies away from like the hunting and killing of sea beasts. So I enjoy that it doesn't like pull punches in that respect, and is about kind of like understanding they're kind of animals that are living their own lives. But yeah, feel like there's a little bit in this movie for everyone to enjoy. And I think it is worth the watch just for the animation style, the animation effects and things. But yeah, it was fun on this rewatch as well. So I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. I think it's great. And that continues on to its technical score. Fairly simple script, but you know, for a kaiju clone of How to Train Your Dragon, I don't feel like they need to reinvent the wheel in order to kind of knock this out of the park. You know, like I said, I just can't talk enough about the water and the sand physics, the smoothness of the character's animation as well is something that I really enjoyed. Like their movement through space, our two main characters, I liked a great deal. But yeah, I remember seeing this trailer for the first time. I was just like, wow, Netflix is going hard on these animated movies. And yeah, the voice acting, like I said, might be a little flat for some of the more rowdy crew of pirates at some places. Like I said, Carl Urban was very good, but it just feels like he is doing a good amount of Carl Urban, you know?
He is, but like it in a great way.
Yeah, I just wanted I wanted a little bit more from him. It's similar to what's his name in Rumble.
No, I think it is a better job in this than
I expected a little bit more. I was like, oh, Carl Urban is our main character.
But Will Arnett also like rests on his voice laurels a lot, from his Reese's commercials to a lot of other stuff that he does. Like I like Will Arnett a lot. Don't get me wrong. I'm not denying his bag, but I think I personally believe that Carl Urban does a little bit more emotionally here than Will Arnett does in Rumble.
That is true. And they both have similar kind of stuff between the two main characters. But yeah, I think it's great. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10 for its technical score. What about you?
I'm in this a little lower. So the radical wild difference in styles did bother me quite a bit.
Hmm.
Just because, like, you have some of the, I mean, literally some of the best ocean animation I have ever seen. Wild. Especially like when the camera is bobbing in and out of the ocean, especially that first sequence. It's incredible. Literally some of the best stuff I've ever seen. And then you have some of these character designs that are super cartoony against this world. And I mentioned this as kind of a problem beforehand with in comparison to the monster designs. But like when the ocean, the world, the ships specifically, like when all of this stuff looks the way it does, and then your humans and monsters look very DreamWorks-like, It does kind of take me out of things at the moment, because I can appreciate the beauty of certain things, and then I'm like, well, I'm looking at this Goomba bopping around, and the style just isn't quite flowing for me, and it's not it's too bad, because like not a single part of this is done poorly. But there is that aspect. There's also some world building stuff in the script that I wish had either gotten accentuated or at least teased a little. Like, we have this moment where, like, oh, the royal family was their crest is on every single history book and every mention of these monsters. I wish there's a little bit more of that. Like, we already get the sense that the royal family are a bunch of dickwads, but like, we don't really get that. And the movie doesn't, like, it gives it to us in the last sequence with them, and it gives it to us in, like, in certain moments, but like, not for real, for real. And I was really disappointed in the movie for not delivering on that aspect. But outside of the script, I mean, overall, everything else is really, really fine. I do wish that Big Red had a better design. Like, it's too toothless, and both figuratively and literally. Because while it does look like a Big Red toothless, it also kind of just looks nondescript. And you have, you know, the really cute blue, and you have the other monsters that we get, and this one just kind of so, like, so much of this movie is right there, and so much of it kind of misses the point for me. So I gotta go with a 7 out of 10 on that one.
What about its importance as a piece of kaiju film history? Where do you rank this amongst not just other animated kaiju movies, but other kaiju movies in general?
So on one end, I do feel this is a little kaiju adjacent, but kaiju adjacent in the way of those great sea monster movies that do inspire the kind of big kaiju boom that comes later. Like when you think of the Beast of 20,000 Fathoms and stuff like that, like it is evocative of that. And that idea of the age of exploration and finding these great monsters in the depths. So in that aspect of it being kaiju adjacent, I can give it some flowers. Mm-hmm. And if I'm talking about kaiju adjacent movies and someone's like, oh, what are some other great ones to watch? I'm not going to lie. This is going to come up. This is a really fun movie. It's got all the swashbuckling action you can want. It's got some great monsters. It's got a very solid script despite my problems with it. So I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10. I think it's a solid entry in the kind of like the sea monster era of kaiju storytelling. But I don't know if it deserves much more than that, just because like it's not specifically a kaiju film. It's more of the monsters of the deep. And that can always be a tricky area. But also because the main monster isn't that interesting outside of being like a lovable character.
A scamp.
It's hard to recommend it like heartily, but also this is a very, very good movie.
I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. I think this movie
I get it.
I think it's great. I think it's a terrific kids film. It is a very fun fantasy kaiju movie, and it does something, it presents something for the genre that doesn't exist elsewhere, which, you know, Red does feel like a Godzilla in sea creature form in this film. It feels like the big bad of this universe. Other, you know, monsters.
But also, Red feels like Quasimodo. Like like Red has a character to it that's different than Godzilla, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And I will say it also is just, it's something that I've wanted from these movies, which is specifically sea monsters, sea kaiju.
Yes.
The scale is definitely there. And the fact that it's like taking on giant ships full of, you know, 100 people or whatever is very interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited about it. I'm happy that it came out and potentially we're getting a sequel. So we're both basically at an 8 out of 10 for this movie, which is high praise from us. That means it's going on the great list. You're a little reserved in some aspects, but our podcast final is an 8 out of 10 for The Sea Beast, which I'm pretty stoked about.
I am too. I'm very happy this also kind of does, it approaches things from a marine biology perspective. Like it is, like it does invite the audience to be like, hey, everything you've been taught as being a monster, or like people have told you, oh, that's a horrible creature from the sea, like may not be what you think. And because there are a lot of creatures that have reputations in our oceans that, you know, don't necessarily deserve them, or that gets taken advantage of, and you know, things like finning and stuff happen. And you know, I love that a movie is like teaching kids to like, hey, you know, look at your oceans with wonder and not fear. I do love that.
Yeah. Only in our very short season 8 so far, our third great film, our 8 out of 10 or above, still no 10 out of 10s yet, but it joins Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0 Thrice Upon a Time and Godzilla versus Kong up there.
All right with that.
Yeah. So pretty happy to finally get a chance to chat you up about it. This is one that you were saving for the podcast. I guess I couldn't wait when this one came out. I was pretty excited.
I missed the opening salvo of this film. And so once I did, I was like, I'll wait to watch Patrick.
Yes. So yeah, where can folks find us if they want to chat things animated kaiju, Miles?
Well, if you want to email us, you can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can reach us on Blue Sky at Kaiju Versus History. You can go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com. You can go to our sister podcast, Cosmic Crit. Enter the Discord. There is a Kaiju Versus History channel where you can talk to Patrick and I in real time about anything kaiju related. If you got a response to an episode of ours that you've been like honking to talk to us about, or if you have some new news, we post figure stuff and, you know, possible new movie news on there. We're happy to talk to anyone about kaiju stuff and do check out our Letterboxd account, which is Kaiju vs. History, to see all reviews and our list of films. And Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Oh, Miles, thank you so much. Thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you next time when the end of a monster movie with a giant dead kaiju lion in the middle of your city is just the beginning, as we will launch a crack team solve the problem of body removal. That's right. Tune in next time for History versus What to Do with a Dead Kaiju.